Happy Friday, everybody. This is Harriet Westmore with the More Wine and Music Podcast, the podcast where I discuss early artists for early genre over a glass of wine. Tonight, I'm going to discuss a female early innovator. So stay tuned. All right. Welcome. Hope everybody has a good Friday and a good weekend. Before we get started, I'm going to do a little bit of housekeeping. Log on to buymeacoffee.com/morewineandmusic to contribute to the podcast so I can continuously bring content to the show. Also, you can also subscribe to the More Wine and Music podcast at www.morewineandmusicpodcast.com and become a subscriber. Keep up to date with all the good information about the history of American music. All right, so here we go. Before I get started, let's see. I just kind of want to make sure all my settings are in place. All right, everything is cool. All right, so this week I wanted to do a female innovator of the early jazz genre, and her name was Lillian Hardin Armstrong. And if you recognize the last name Armstrong, yes, she was a ex-wife of the great Louis Satchmo Armstrong. You know, while most early innovators of the jazz genre were men, you know, I cannot leave out women whose musical talents helped shape, you know, jazz, the early jazz genre too. So henceforth, Miss Lillian. Lillian Beatrice Hardin was born on February 3rd in 1898 in Memphis, Tennessee. Her parents were Dempsey Martin Hardin and father William Hardin. That was her mom's name was Dempsey, which was, I thought it was kind of an unusual name for a female. Father's name was William. Her mother was one of 13 children in her mother actually was born enslaved. So she was a slave when she was born. So after slavery, it was after she became married to William, she gave birth to two children. One of the children died in childbirth. And the other one, of course, is Lillian. While Lillian was a young girl, her parents just separated. And for whatever reason, I don't know exactly the year of when they separate, but it was said that Lillian was, you know, a pretty young girl. So she had to be probably maybe between 5 and 8 years old when her parents decided to separate. So Miss Dempsey and her little daughter, Lillian, they moved into a boarding house where her mom worked as a cook for, you know, cooking for white families. So that was her way of supporting herself and her daughter. Lillian decided she wanted to get into music. So she became interested in playing the piano. And her mom encouraged her to pursue music. So she saved up her money and sent Lillian to school to actually learn how to read music, which is one of the rare things back then, because a lot of artists, as we know, that they just hear and you know, they would play by ear. They actually didn't know how to read music. But Lillian was one of the few who actually went to school and studied music, and she was able to read music. So, of course, as most artists, especially particularly Black artists, they started playing in the church. That's how they get start. That's how they got started. And living in Memphis, matter of fact, they didn't live not too far from Beale Street. So obviously she was attracted to the music of that was going on Beale Street, which was mainly blues. And so, you know, listening to the blues on and all the artists that was coming through on Beale Street, you know, that just grabbed little Lillian's attention. Her mom, on the other hand, wasn't happy about that. She thought her daughter, you know, could do better by playing more of a, I don't want to say more of an upscale type of music. She didn't want her daughter to be hanging around what she considered lower class of people who played the blues. And so she kind of dissuade her daughter to stop hanging around in that type of environment. So she sent her daughter to Fisk University in Nashville. And that was where Lillian studied classical music. And that was from 1915 to 1916. So, I mean, again, you know, her mom wanted her daughter to learn more of a classical type of music. She didn't like Lillian hanging around the what she called the lowlifes of artists that were hanging around on Beale Street. So after she completed her studies between 1915 and 1916, Lillian came back to Memphis, and that was when her mom decided to relocate, leave Tennessee and relocate to Chicago. So she and Lillian packed up their little stuff and moved to Chicago. Shortly after moving to Chicago, Lillian took a job as a music demonstrator at the Jones Music Store. Because she was able to read music, she was able to access sheet music. So while, you know, working in the store and demonstrating music or music instruments in the store, she was able to have free rein of accessing different pieces of music that she was able to read. And it was there that she actually met Jolly Roll Morton. And since meeting Jolly Roll, Lillian was able to get jobs and play with different bands within the Chicago area. She was doing that while maintaining her job at the Jones Music Store. So, I mean, she was a little she was a little go-getter. She kept her job and was playing around in different bands. And it was at that point, because she became starting to get popular, she was nicknamed Hot Miss Lil. So from here on out, this is where she got the name of Lil. So this is where I'm going to be referring to her from here on out, Lil. All right. So, you know, again, her mom, Miss Dempsey, didn't like the fact that her daughter was playing, you know, in these bands and stuff, that was playing these certain types of music. But, you know, she didn't dissuade her either. So she eventually came around and supported her for doing that. So Lil was recognized for her piano and for her work in playing the piano. And she started playing with Lawrence Duhay and the New Orleans Jazz Band that was playing in the Chicago area at that time. In 1918, give or take, between 1918 and 1920, she even played with the great King Oliver Creole band. As you recall, a couple of episodes back, I talked about King Oliver. So Lillian actually played in the band. So she played, she was the pianist in the band with King Oliver at that time. And while she was playing in the band, she met her soon-to-be future husband. His name was Jimmy Johnson. Jimmy Johnson was a singer. He didn't actually, wasn't a part of the King Oliver's Creole band, but he was a jazz singer around Chicago. So she met him, and they eventually married. And, you know, both being musicians, it kind of took a toll on both of their marriage, because Lillian was traveling with King Oliver's Creole band. So she was not home half the time. And then, you know, Jimmy was singing in another band. So, you know, to try to save her marriage, Lillian quit playing with King Oliver and came back to Chicago. But, you know, shortly thereafter, you know, in 1922, she was actually missed in the King Oliver's band. So they asked her to rejoin, and she did. But, you know, at the cost of her marriage. And it was at this point in 1922 that she met the young cornet player Louis Armstrong. So while they both played in King Oliver's Creole band, she and Louis, you know, they were bandmates and they were also friends, and they both were married at the time. So, you know, they weren't really attracted to each other because they were married. And it was said that actually Lillian didn't think too much of him other than just a friend and a bandmate. But over time, they did become closer, and they each decided to divorce their prospective spouse. And so I think Lillian and Jimmy, they divorced first, and then afterwards, Louis and his first wife, who was named Daisy, he divorced her. And then Louis and Lillian, they became married. So it was Lillian, after the marriage, you know, Lillian was kind of the one who kind of recreated Louis Armstrong. I mean, as far as his presentation in the audience, she was the one who helped him create a better wardrobe and had him, you know, cut his hair to be a little more attractive looking. So she really was the one who kind of reinvented him and made him more presentable and more marketable for the audience. And she was also the one who advocated for him to leave King Oliver's Creole band and go off on his own, because actually at that time, he was the kind of like the second chair to King Oliver. King Oliver, before he became, as you recall, he became sick. I think he had pyorrhea, which is disease in the gums. And but prior to that, you know, King Oliver was the main. I mean, that was his band, so he was the leader. But you know, Lillian's kind of persuaded her husband, Louis, to, you know, one of those ones that will be in your ear, you know, you can do better on your own. So he eventually left the Creole jazz band and went off on his own. Actually, he hooked up with a guy named Ferguson, I believe. And so he played with him, and actually Louis, this was all in New York. So they decided to come back to Chicago. And when they came back to Chicago, that's when they kind of Louis became to get more popular, with Lillian being the helm and the one that actually pushed him and actually helped him become the person that he was. So actually the name was, it wasn't, his name was Fletcher. I'm sorry, Fletcher Henderson. That's who Louis Armstrong left King Oliver's band and played with a guy named Fletcher Henderson. But while Louis was playing with Fletcher Henderson in New York, Lillian couldn't really find much gigs to play for herself in New York. So that's when she decided to come back to Chicago. And she put together a band herself, and then to where Louis was a featured artist. And so after, you know, playing around in New York for a while with Fletcher Henderson and among others, Louis Armstrong came back to Chicago with his wife, and together they recorded actual hits like the Hot Five Orchestra and Hot Stevens. And this was around in 1925. At the particular time in the early days of jazz, being a pianist was like, the pianist was like the foundation. So they kept the foundation of the music, which allowed other instruments in the band to be more creative and do some improvisation. So that's what Lillian did. And Lillian was one of the ones that honed that craft. She was able to play and keep that beat going while the other instruments, horns and everything, can come in and, you know, show off their creativity. On a personal note, is anybody who knows about Louis Armstrong, he was very good in one of the best horn players in the jazz industry, but he was also a womanizer. And so he was never a faithful in his marriage. And this, you know, created rift between he and Lillian. And, you know, of course, Lillian was very jealous of his infidelity. Even though, you know, he was unfaithful to her, they continued to record and make and co-write and write music together and record. She was even his manager. And as she being his manager, that's, you know, his popularity pretty much grew from there. And while Louis was on the road, Lillian decided to return to school and obtain a diploma from the Chicago School College of Music in 1928. Afterwards, Lillian bought a nice large home in Chicago and also a cottage. She was able to buy a cottage. And she was hoping, you know, buying these properties, she hoped that this would, you know, bring Louis home off the road and stop, you know, being a cheater. It didn't. You know, he continued to cheat and, you know, be on the road and have all these other women while he was on the road. But in the meantime, Lil, she formed several other bands throughout the years. Some of them were all female bands and some of them were all male, but I mean, it was Lillian who, you know, started and created these bands. And, she was very ambitious. She was a very ambitious woman. She went back to school again in New York this time, and she got her postgraduate degree in music. And she, because she wanted to change gears, instead of, you know, writing and playing music, she wanted to become an actual songwriter and she wanted to become a singer. So she got her postgraduate degree in the New York College of Music. And, you know, she became more of a songwriter. By 1938, the marriage was pretty much over. So, you know, they decided divorce. But one thing about Lillian, she was able to get a financial, a very generous financial settlement from Louis, you know, to the point she was able to keep all her properties, and she was able to keep the rights of the songs that she co-produced and co-wrote with him. So, I mean, she was a smart, educated businesswoman. So she got what she fought, you know, felt that she was due. She was able to keep her properties and live the standard of living that she was accustomed to as a artist. And she actually was smart enough to make sure that she owns the rights to her music, which a lot of artists did not do. So she was a very, you know, she was a kind of ahead of her time, it seemed, very much ahead of her time. After a while, she kind of wanted to try another venture, so to speak. So she decided to become a fashion designer. You know, she was the one who recreated and styled her ex-husband, Louis. So, I mean, she figured, you know, that she can use that as to her advantage. And actually, Louis was continued to be one of her customers, even though they were, you know, divorced. He still respected her enough and recognized her talent and her gift of styling. So he was one of her customers. On July 6th of 1971, Louis Armstrong had passed away. And so it was like 6 weeks later, she was playing at a concert, you know, and played in tribute, tribute concert in memory of him. And she suffered from a massive heart attack and she died. So they died 6 weeks apart. So even though Louis had most of the success between them, it was actually Lillian who was behind his success. She was the one who actually pushed him and elevated him to where he, you know, to where he became. But, you know, she wasn't as well known, but she did contribute to a lot. And she was one of the first female jazz artists in the early jazz genre. And, you know, she was one of a talented, educated woman in her day. So that was Lillian Hardin Armstrong. All right. I hope you enjoyed that little piece. Next week, I'm going to be talking about another artist, which I've never heard of. His name was Jack Teagarden. So this will be interesting. This is episode 7 for next week. So stay tuned for next week. And thank you for listening tonight. And again, if you want to help donate to keep the podcast going, just click on buymeacoffee.com/morewineandmusic and make a donation. And this will help keep the podcast and the content going. All right. So, guys, enjoy your Friday night and enjoy the rest of your weekend. Have a good night. Bye.